Welcome to Wormhole Waffles, a Stargate podcast. Welcome to Wormhole Waffles. I'm your host, Chelsea, and with me is my co-host, Arzu.
Hello.
Last week, we talked about Stargate SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 5 and 6, with some fun alien cameos. And today, we're going to be talking about Season 5, Episodes 7 and 8, Beast of Burden and The Tomb. Beast of Burden premiered on August 10th, 2001, was written by Peter DeLuise and directed by Martin Wood. And The Tomb premiered on August 17th, 2001, and was written by Joseph Malozzi and Paul Mully and directed by Peter DeLuise. So we have another fun callback this week and a good old-fashioned mystery. Arzu, would you please summarize these episodes?
So in Beast of Burden, which I can't decide if it's problematic or not.
Same.
I'm like, it's a toss-up.
Yeah.
On a planet where... Oh, I'm going to say this wrong. Unas?
Yes.
Unas. Where they see the Unas again, and they are being enslaved by humans who don't seem to recognize Jack and Daniel as humans, which I thought was funny. So where they are being enslaved, and the guys try to fix it because all of a sudden we can get involved in other planet stuff.
Sure.
Which, like, they should have been doing all along, but this is like a revelation for them.
Yeah.
And in The Tomb, the Russians are here, yeah. And we're taking them through the Stargate, and mm-hmm. I'm so sorry that I was watching this episode while I was eating.
Yeah, this is not one to watch while eating.
I didn't think to look ahead. I didn't think is what I'm saying. So there's something in The Tomb, and it's eating people.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really wish I wasn't eating chicken wings when I was watching this. It was just bad timing.
It would have been worse if you had been eating, like, calamari or something, because the thing had, like, tentacle-looking things.
Tentacle things are fine. It's the fact that it's eating people, and they're like, these bones! And I'm, like, holding bones, and I'm like,
ugh. Oh, no.
Briefly flirted with the idea of vegetarianism.
Right.
then I remembered I like meat too much, but yeah. I did think about it.
Okay, let's do our quote reveal. Last week I gave you the quote, "It didn't decompose. This skeleton's covered in tiny teeth marks." And your guess was that SG-1 is on another planet examining a corpse, and Daniel is the one to get close and discover that it's covered in teeth marks. You had the context right, but it was Sam who discovered it and determined that it was covered in teeth marks. So, close. So close.
Hey, listen, I should have known. Something about how casual this sentence is. I should have known it wasn't Daniel.
He's more dramatic.
It made sense in the moment when I was watching it. I'm going, yeah, of course this was, like, I should have known it wasn't Daniel, but the logic's really not holding up now. But it did make sense at the time.
I mean, it's not like I give you a really long explanatory paragraph, so, like, do what you can.
I should have known.
Okay, so we start with episode Beast of Burden, and yeah, I also can't decide if it's problematic or not. It deals with slavery, and that's a touchy subject, obviously. You know, it's really delicate.
It's a delicate subject, and the choice to have everybody in, like, cowboy attire,
right,
was a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know. The fact that they keep calling them beasts. And I know there was a line in the Bible that people use as a justification for it about, like, the beasts of the field. And, like,
right.
And, like, putting that together, I'm not sure that the writers thought about that. Maybe they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so essentially the story on this planet is that this planet used to be ruled by a Gwold in Unas form who had other Unas working for him who may or may not have had golds in them. It's unclear. And they were enslaving the local human population. For whatever reason, the gold left. There were some Unas left behind. And so the humans started a revolution, turned the tables. And so now the Unas are the slaves, with the humans being their masters. And it's like the whole thing is like a big question of, like, how much do we get involved with this? is it our business? And we get involved in the first place because our old friend Chaka is involved. So the kind of main slave trader on this planet, called Burak, he has gate coordinates to exactly one planet, which happens to be Chaka's planet, because, I mean, that is the origin of the Uno, so that makes sense. And he goes and kidnaps Chaka and brings him back because he needs new blood to diversify his, you know, self-described inbred slave system. So
another yikes on bikes. I don't have the proof for it on hand, but I'm pretty sure that happened too.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, one question I had was like, do the female Unas look the same as the men and they're just smaller? Because I didn't see any with noticeable female traits, but it could be that they just look incredibly similar and have smaller horns or something.
That had been my assumption, that they're just kind of there.
Yeah. And
like, for our purposes, like, of like, you know, the violent ones.
Right.
Locked up, just happened to be male, but
right. Well, there was that one pretty docile one in the jail. It made me wonder if maybe that was the female Unas.
Oh, true.
But I don't know. And we also didn't see any children Unas. And I mean, if they're breeding them, you'd think there would be.
Maybe they're keeping them somewhere. Keeps the parents in line. Yeah. They can raise them a certain way.
Yeah, probably. So, yeah, I mean, it was interesting that it appeared that we only saw male Unas, but yeah, it's not very clear. I guess maybe that makes it, like, more palatable if we're not seeing Unas that are clearly women and children being enslaved.
That's the problem with slavery in fiction in general, is that it's an easy, quote-unquote, plot device, but if the people telling the story aren't willing to, like, really reckon with what that means, then it just kind of winds up feeling, like, not that bad.
Yeah.
Not that serious. It's just, like, this is, like, you know, these are, like, guys working at the Amazon warehouse. You know what I mean? Like, they need a longer lunch break. It doesn't feel as all-encompassing as it is.
Yeah.
So maybe it is problematic.
Well, yeah, I think my issue with this was, so, like, the plot is basically Chaka gets kidnapped and taken to this planet to be added to the slave population, and Daniel had set up some cameras on Chaka's planet, so he was able to find footage and see that he was taken and go look after him. Daniel explicitly states that he is there to rescue Chaka and Chaka only, and it's not until things go wrong and they end up more enmeshed than they intended to be, Daniel later decides that they should probably free all of them and end the slavery on this planet. But for the majority of the episode, it's like he's only concerned about Chaka. And like, maybe if they can take two or three others with them, cool. So it's like a very selective moral imperative. Like, you're concerned about your friend, but you're not concerned about all the other slaves.
That's kind of par for the course for Daniel, though, isn't it?
But he's normally, like, the moralistic one.
Isn't he the one who was, like, fully about to watch a lady get raped?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, well, it's their culture. Like, come on now.
And yeah, then, like,
I could excuse it in heavy air quotes in the early days, because it's like, okay, they're new to using the Stargate. They're new to hopping planet to planet. They don't know, like, what the implications would be. Of involvement, but we are like 5 years into this mission.
Yeah.
At this point, like, you kind of need to take a moral stance, and it's a little weird that Daniel doesn't.
I think that kind of comes to the problem of, like, I mean, if you kind of compare it to Star Trek with their prime directive, Stargate doesn't have that, but it seems like sometimes they act like they do and sometimes they don't. Like, they're really pick and choose about which planets they're going to step in and intervene and which planets they don't. And I think it would be a lot less messy if they had a prime directive where it was very clear on what they could and could not intervene with, because what we end up with is this kind of hodgepodge of, like, oh, well, we personally feel like we should intervene in this case, so we're going to, versus, it's not really concerning to us. We're just going to leave it alone.
I mean, yeah, because like with Star Trek, with the Prime Directive, like they have a law, they have a directive that you don't get involved with a pre-warp civilization. So whether or not the crew thinks it's moral, legally they can't get involved. So then the issue then becomes, but should we get involved? Because is it moral? Like then that becomes their thing. But here it's like every single time there's a moral issue, because there's no rule kind of prohibiting Stargate from getting involved, really, like SG-1 from getting involved, then every single time there's a moral issue and they fail to act, that reflects on the team, not on the SGC, not on Hammond. It reflects on them there in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's not good. That's not what you want for your heroes.
Yeah. But I mean, and it does still reflect on the SGC, though, because SG-1 is like the primary team and they set the example for others. So how they behave on their mission is going to dictate how the other team leaders decide to act on their own missions.
Sure. I just mean you can't, like they can't throw responsibility for their actions onto the SGC because the SGC isn't telling them how to behave.
Right. Okay. I see what you mean. Yeah. 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 And I mean, on the one hand, you know, General Hammond isn't there on these missions, so he can't give a direct order when he's not there to be able to give an opinion on it. So obviously, like, when you're thrown into situations, you do have to think on your feet and come up with the best thing that you can do with the situation in the moment. But if you're not given any guidelines in which to make that decision, then it's a mess.
And that's the thing, is they're completely out to sea with their own morals every single time. And like, Daniel's got like the anthropological must preserve the culture bent. Mm-hmm. And Jack's got the let's go in guns blazing opinion. And Teal is like not human, not of Earth. So he's coming from that POV. And Sam is perfect and never did anything wrong in her life. But but do you know what I mean? Like, she brings her own perspective to it. Like, so...
Well, I feel like half the time Jack is guns a-blazing, half the time he's like, I don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. That's it's like true. Either or. He's like either in or he's out.
But the thing is, if they had been bringing these four distinct POVs and applying it to civilization, to ideas like slavery, like a lady is getting assaulted, like a planet's about to blow up. If they had come to these situations with these four POVs and a rule dictating how they're supposed to react to it, and how their own POV comes into contrast with that rule or agrees with that rule, that would, I think, make it a little smoother as opposed to it just kind of being like ethics are up for debate this way.
Right. A grab bag of moral ethics that you can choose to follow or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So... so it's complicated. And Jack actually, I feel like Jack is kind of racist in this episode. Like, yeah. I mean, I think obviously the Unas are not human, but you can still be racist towards them. Like, he calls Chaka full of nuts. And I'm like, oh my God, that's gross. And he like clearly doesn't think of the Unas as people. And I'm like, I understand that they're not on our level of intelligence, but they have language, they have art, you know, whatever your opinion of their art might be, whatever, keep your opinion to yourself, buddy. They do have art. That is a sign of advanced intelligence. Even if it's not your own level of intelligence, it is still intelligence, you know. So him just like constantly talking down about them. And I'm like, it seems like he's not much better than the enslavers. Like, okay, he's not doing the enslaving himself, but it doesn't seem like he has a problem with it.
And I'm just like, this is again where the moral thing comes in, but also like, maybe the writers just didn't think about it. But then how does that make your main guy look?
Yeah.
When that's your default.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you said they're not human, but it's still racist. It's xenophobic.
Yes.
That's the wording they use to describe the Empire in Star Wars, and the fact that, like, there are no aliens in the Empire except for Thrawn, and that's like a whole thing. The Empire is xenophobic.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it's
which
just...
I know in on Earth we used to mean something else, but like in a sci-fi context.
Yeah, in a sci-fi context. Yeah, totally. And I mean, I guess Sam and Teal'c were kind of left out of making moral decisions, so we didn't really get to hear what they heard about it.
So I can't tell if that's a coincidence or like a clever choice on the part of the writers.
Yeah.
To like just have the two white guys blunder their way through this.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was intentional.
I don't know.
I can only guess.
I mean, I feel like it was like Daniel had to be involved because of his connection with Chaka, and then like Jack is team leader, so it makes sense that he was involved. And so Sam and Teal'c were acting as backup and like staying hidden in the woods so that they could be there in case something went wrong. But yeah, I mean, it's just convenient that they didn't have to like make moral decisions. So, well, I guess I'm bringing it back to like some happy things. So we do have Dion Johnstone back as Chaka in this episode. I think we're going to have Chaka in one more episode, but it's going to be a different actor. And then the Shy Unas is played by Alex Zahara, which some people will recognize. He's in 8 total episodes of Stargate. He was Michael in the 1969 episode. He was Zales in that episode with the Native Americans. He was a foothold alien. And then he's in a few future episodes where he's completely covered in makeup. So he's like a Stargate regular. He's also in episodes of Dark Angel, Once Upon a Time, Battlestar Galactica, Supernatural. So he's one of those.
What's like, Once Upon a Time?
I don't know. I'll let you look that up.
I know this face.
Well, you should recognize his face from the 1969 episode when he looked like himself.
No.
Did you not find it?
No, I don't see it on his IMDb. But maybe I got the wrong name. No. That's correct.
That's where I found it.
Nah, it's not helping me. Ah, well, it's fine. And believe me, I was just like, damn, okay.
So, Daniel and Jack try to negotiate Chaka's release, and the slave trader, Brooke, is not having it, and he ends up locking them in jail with Chaka and some other Unas. And so it kind of becomes this whole situation of now that Brooke knows that the Stargate can go many places, he wants to get some more gate addresses, be taught how to use the Stargate, be taught how to use their weapons and all this stuff. Because, you know, slave trader's gonna slave trade.
Yeah.
And so Sam and Teal'c are hanging back, and they... eventually they're overnight, and then the next morning Teal'c is like, I'm tired of just waiting. And so they create a distraction, they start a fire and blow up some water so the people can't immediately put out the fire. So meantime Sam can go in to the jail and free Daniel and Jack and all the Unas that are in there. And I was like, okay, good. Maybe we'll like stop getting racist comments. Cause I feel like Jack was the most racist when he was like laying in his jail cell with nothing to do. And I'm like, oh my God, Jack. So they run to the Stargate with Chaka and two other Unas, one of whom gets killed in the process because some of Burke's men are there waiting for them. And Chaka ends up killing Brooke, and he decides that he wants to stay and free all of the other Unas. And then we come to like this whole moral argument yet again at the end, because, well, for one thing, Daniel tells Chaka not to kill Brooke, and I'm like, why?
Because suddenly he's got a conscience in like the wrong direction.
So like you watched Brooke kill at least 3 Unas in this episode, and then you're upset that Chaka killed him? Like, why are we sad about a slaver getting killed? I don't... What? And then, so, like, Chaka is like, I'm gonna go back and help free the other Unas, and SG-1 is not gonna help, which, I mean, I kind of understand, because that's a lot of risk to, like, get involved in a firefight with a large yeah. group of people. But... It's slavery. Go free the slaves.
I can't believe that with something this explicitly presented to them, that they're still waffling on and they're like, oh, okay. Do you know what, like, I mean?
If they were afraid of lives being lost, they could have gone with Chaka to try to make sure as few humans got killed as possible. You know?
Like, but that would require them thinking.
Like, used Zat guns to put down anyone who's fighting temporarily, free all of the Unas from their bonds, schlep them to the Stargate, and go through. And I don't know, maybe I was thinking, because, like, you run the risk of the locals going back to Chaka's planet and kidnapping some Unas again. You could potentially set some C4 by the Stargate, like by the DHD, maybe, then have it set to go off after you go through the Stargate, so then their DHD gets blown up and they can't leave the planet. You know, you can get creative, come up with something like that.
But again, that would require them thinking.
Yeah. I don't know if it's, like, again, like a protocol thing, maybe. They're not supposed to, like, if they don't have to get in the firefight, they're not supposed to, but there's not a clearly defined protocol.
See, that situation. Protocol, I can understand kind of, like, not only being in place, but kind of being, like, assumed.
Yeah.
Because their job isn't, like, I'm going to get the terminology for this wrong, but their job isn't, like, warfare. Like, yeah. It's not an active campaign. They're not actively pushing forward. So
right.
I could understand the directive kind of being a little more, like, exploration and assessment right. And stuff yeah. like that. So them not pushing through makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know why that wasn't explained to the audience, because, like, that's kind of a big assumption.
But also, part of the point of their mission in the first place was to get Chaka and bring him back to his home planet. And they didn't do that.
Because he didn't want to go.
Well, sure, but I mean...
But, like, help, what are they going to do? Knock him out and take him back?
Well, I mean, help him do what he wants to do before he goes home.
But then that's not their mission either.
I guess. And they also didn't make it clear whether or not Chaka knew how to get back home on his own.
I'm going to go ahead and assume he does, especially because we see him later.
Yeah, I think we have to assume that he does, but we never see Daniel teach him how to use the Stargate, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think that's one of those things where it's like, not to make it about Star Wars again, but we never see Rey learn how to fly a ship. We just assume she learned how off screen right. somewhere. We yeah. never see Luke Skywalker do anything and just assume he learned how to do it. Really don't like Luke Skywalker. Don't at me. Never see him learn anything. He just kind of shows up like, I can do this now. And I'm like, good for you. So, you know what I mean? He just learned it off screen somewhere. So I'm assuming Daniel walked him through it off screen somewhere.
Sure. I mean, it's possible.
Listen, I don't have anything to drag. Oh, no, wait, I have plenty to drag Daniel for, but I'm also going to drag Luke Skywalker because I feel about the same about both of them. I don't like protagonists, apparently.
Well, I feel like it's a certain personality type.
That you don't like. I don't do it.
So, yeah, I mean, essentially, the episode ends. SG-1 is fine. They go back home. And, I mean, at this point, we don't know if Chaka is going to be fine or not. And we eventually find out that he's fine because we see him in a later episode. But, like, for now, we honestly don't know if he's going to be fine or not.
I'm going to assume. I mean, I know yeah. because you said he's coming back. But
right. But, like, if you didn't know that, then it's like,
fiction. Well, if I don't see a body.
Then yeah, that's true. Yeah, so, I mean, I agree with you that I'm unsure about if this episode is problematic by nature. It's really on the fence.
I think it's problematic.
Okay.
I think it's problematic. I also think it's very funny that they are accosted by humans at the beginning. And they're like, we've never seen your kind before. Like, from one white man to another.
Right. Well, I guess they're wearing a different style of clothing and have different weapons.
So. But, like, if somebody comes to me wearing an outfit I've never seen, I'm not going to be like, I've never seen your kind before. I'm like, I've never seen that outfit before.
I mean, I guess from his perspective, he's never met anyone who came from another planet before. So he's like...
But he doesn't know that until after, when they tell him that they came through the Stargate.
Yeah, so I mean, I think he's wondering, like, doing mental calculations of, is there another village on this planet that I don't know about? And do they have a different culture than I do? You know, I just see how he has mental calculation going on. But I mean, coming from a guy who talks about beasts and would definitely be somebody who says those people, you know,
that's true.
It's not surprising that he talks about your kind.
He's got one of those nightmare bios on on Instagram. I did think it was funny. He's like, I've never seen your kind before. And I'm like, ah, yes, Americans. Because he's got such a Canadian accent. I'm like, he 100% means Americans.
Right. I did find it really amusing that when Daniel was introducing himself and Jack, and Burke asked what the designation colonel meant, and Daniel's like, he's our head traitor. And Burke is like, okay, you can call me Colonel Burke. I'm like, that was cute.
He's just rolling with it. But also, like, if somebody from somewhere else, from another culture, has like an equivalent standing to you, I wouldn't like adopt their title.
That's true.
You know what I mean?
That, you know what, that's a good point. That is very white man. To be
which
like, I'm gonna adopt whatever I want from your culture
wholesale. Yeah, like, I don't know. It's just, I'm struggling to think of a real world example, and I can't, but like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm also struggling because we live in such a colonial world that so much of it does sort of cross borders at this point, but like, that's not your designation to have.
Yeah, I guess that'd be the equivalent of, like, a white leader calling himself a chief.
Oh, yeah, that's a good example. Yeah. That is a good example.
When it's like, yeah, but you don't have that hierarchy, so...
That's, like, your setup, so why are you using it?
Yeah. So, slavery. Slavery is bad. You know, we learned that slavery was bad on Stargate Infinity also.
Yes. I'm glad we need to consistently learn this lesson.
Right. I feel like it was a more obvious moral lesson on Stargate Infinity than it was in this episode.
I don't know. Maybe. When did it come up in Infinity? Which one was it?
I feel like it came up in several, didn't it?
Yes? Was this the time that they wanted to sell Harrison to somebody and he's like, ew, and then he's like, wait, she's hot. Was
that one of them? That's one of them. I feel like there was a later one too.
Why do I feel like Infinity had a little more nuance?
Or at least class systems, if not slavery.
Yeah, there was definite hierarchies and castes and stuff like that. And I feel like Infinity was a little on the nose about it all.
A little too on the nose sometimes, but at least it was like fairly obvious, like what's good and what's bad.
And also, I feel like they never hesitated the way SG-1 does.
Yeah.
Which I can't believe we're sitting here praising Infinity and Arma's not even here for it, but like they weren't quite as reticent to like get involved.
They were more like, this is the moral line and we are on this side of it. Whereas, like, SG-1 is like, this is a moral gray area, and we're going to kind of stand over here.
SG-1's like, but both sides. Yeah. Like, y'all.
Well, no, I feel like SG-1 is not both sides. They're more like, we don't want to take a side.
Which is taking a side.
Right.
Inaction is standing on the side of the oppressor. SG-1.
Yeah.
Anyway,
the next episode is much more fun. I still some like light racism or
anti-Russian sentiments.
Yeah, not quite racism, but yeah,
it's very
some isms.
Some very, yeah, it was, yeah. But the walls are back. Different walls. But the walls are back.
So episode The Tomb. Daniel has so many walls to translate. He spends the entire episode translating walls. He is in his happy place. He is really, really thriving.
This is jumping way ahead, but since we're talking about the walls, at one point they're like, there's a gold among us, and which one of us has the multivitamin? And they're like interrogating Daniel because they think it's him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but he's talking to the wall. Like, this is the most in character this man has ever been.
Right?
There's no way this is an imposter. Like, I can tell you that right now with certainty.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, in general with this episode, there's a lot of anti-Russian stuff, which I don't really appreciate. Mm-mm. Because it's totally unnecessary. But if you take that aside, it's a very fun episode. I feel like it's like an adventure game that you would play on your computer in the early aughts. Where it's like you and your friends are trapped in a pyramid and there is a treasure and there's also a monster and you have to figure out how to get the treasure before the monster kills you. Can you make it out on time? You know, I feel like it's a very classic adventure story.
It had that good tension. It was a little freaky for me. I didn't like the guy getting crushed by the door. Don't like when people scream like that.
That was just unnecessary.
Like, that kind of screaming screen makes me very nauseous. I can't explain it. I just don't like it. So I didn't like that. Didn't like the tiny teeth marks.
Okay, well, I guess let's take it from the top.
Let me just list all my problems with this episode out of context. Thank you very much.
So, SG-1 is on a mission. Daniel is trying to translate a door. And they think that no one has been there in a long time, but then Sam finds an empty pack of Russian cigarettes. And so this was not on the list of planets that they had gotten from the Russians. That was the like 7 or 8 planets that they had gone to when they had their Stargate open briefly.
Right.
So they go back home, talk to the Russians, and the Russians are like, oh yeah. So we basically have our own version of the NID. And they sent some people on a secret mission in order to get some treasure that's in this ziggurat, because it's not actually a pyramid. But yeah, I looked it up, and it is from ancient Mesopotamia, a rectangular stepped tower, sometimes surmounted by a temple, first attested in the late 3rd millennium BC, and probably inspired the biblical story of the Tower of Babel.
Oh, that's interesting.
So yeah, that's what a ziggurat is. So they decide to bring in a Russian team on this as kind of a joint, you know, cooperation mission where they're going to go try to rescue this previous Russian team who they assume are trapped in the ziggurat? And you know, if they find some treasure along the way, cool, but the SG-1 is not super concerned about the treasure, and the Russian team obviously is. They're like, oh, we're gonna get that IFT map that has our name on it. We're gonna bring that back. I'm like, okay, good luck with that, y'all.
The one time SG-1 takes a moral stance,
right? The one time they're like, oh, we don't actually care about the treasure.
Sure, guys. It honestly, they probably cared until the Russians showed up and they're like, we're here for a rescue mission, but right? Sure, you can have your treasure. Like, come on, guys. Yeah. So obvious.
Seriously. And like, Jack just like cannot stop picking arguments with the Russians, and I'm like, I get it. You're like American military. You feel like you've got to stand your ground. whatever, stop measuring stuff, and just do literally the thing.
Like, thought they were gonna whip him out and lay him on the right? table. Like,
like, come on, guys. Like, they were comparing guns, and I'm like, I guess that's not mildly better, but
it's not the size of the gun, it's the better marksman.
Right? There you go.
So
I did think it was funny that Major Valerin on the Russian team made fun of them having shitty coffee, and I'm like, it's a military base, dude. Why? They're not gonna have good coffee.
Also, not to defend the military, but there's times of the day where shitty drip coffee is better than the finest, like the finest craft coffee. Sometimes you need the shitty drip coffee with the creamer that makes it cold almost immediately. It's different.
When you're desperate.
Just something like, if I'm having coffee before 6 a.m., it needs to be the shitty drip coffee. I don't want good coffee before 6 a.m. It's not going to hit right.
Right. Yeah. So. I'll take your word for it. So they go to the planet together. Daniel takes at least an hour to finish translating the door, because we know that Jack makes a complaint about being there for an hour, but it's possible it was longer than that. And Jack is like getting fed up with him, and Daniel's like, no, okay, I figured it out. So of course he has to tell the story of, like, you know, what's being described on the door. But yeah, this is his moment.
Yeah, he's like, I've been waiting to translate walls
right?
for years.
But he does it. He translates the door, and he pushes the right stones to get it open. And I was like, there are already stones falling from the ceiling when the door opens. So that's really promising, guys. And so they decide to split up into two teams. And one team with Sam discovers one of the Russian team's corpse. And that's when she discovers that the skeleton has been chewed.
I misunderstood after this. When they go back to look at the skeleton. And she's like, oh, the bite marks. Oh, the creature also ate this person, so the Russian soldier was blah blah blah. I misunderstood and thought that, like, post door crushing, that the Russian guy that got squished had been nibbled on, and this is just what I thought. And then I'm like, it's kind of rude to call him the soldier to his commander and not, like, by his name, like, you knew this guy. And then I realized after, I'm like, that's the same guy. But I had this moment where I was like, he was squished and then they chewed on him anyway. By this point, I was so grossed out that I was just like, I'm not going back. I'm not going back to look at that closer. No, thank you.
Yeah, so the other team discovers the main chamber with the sarcophagus, and somebody steps on, like, a trip stone, which closes the temple doors. But they close pretty slowly, so everybody's, like, running to the door to try to get out on time. And this one Russian dude, like, gets in between to, like, try to push the doors to keep them open, and gets crushed in the process. And I was just like, honestly, you're really stupid, because those doors were closing pretty slowly. He, like, had time to get in there and try to push them, and obviously it wasn't working. He had time to roll back out and didn't. So, like,
you feel like that's his own fault. Yeah. You froze. I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, I froze?
Yeah, I froze and I didn't hear it. But okay. It was like, the door is moving really slowly, so.
The door is moving really slowly, so he had plenty of time to roll out after trying to keep them open. And he just didn't.
I'm glad I got you to repeat that, because I was about to say, yeah, and he could have rolled out too. That would have sounded really stupid.
But yeah, so I was like, that was silly, but okay. And oh, and then his commander, the Russian commander, says casualties are to be expected. I'm like, okay, well, that's one way to inspire the people under your command.
But he's Russian. He's cold. He's heartless. He doesn't love his fellow soldiers the way the Americans do. It's a cold, hard, dispassionate military as opposed to the brotherhood of the SGC.
I guess.
Y'all can't see it if you're listening to it, but I'm making a very sarcastic expression.
My next note is, I wonder if Arzu's can be grossed out by this creature.
And my note is, I really wish I wasn't watching this while eating.
Yeah, we finally get a glimpse of the creature when it attacks the woman on the Russian team, whose name I don't remember. And we don't get to see it close up until later on when it's dead. When we do eventually see it, when it's dead, I'm like, honestly, it's kind of cute.
Okay.
I thought it was cute.
It's actually less the creature and more like what the creature does, but I think it's
right. Gross. I thought it had kind of a cute face.
Sure. If you say so.
Like, sure, it was kind of creepy, and I certainly don't want it to eat me. But, I mean, I could see having that as a pet, maybe, if I was, you know, eat like... other people.
We don't keep the flesh-eating bugs things as pets, Chelsea. We don't do it.
But that happens all the time in sci-fi, where there's, like, a villain who, like, there's this weird creature that thinks the villain is its mother, you know?
But it thinks the villain is its mother. It doesn't think the villain's friends are its... aunts and uncles.
Well, but it follows the commands of the mother, you know. Like with the thing in Star Wars that technically Jabba owns, but it has a handler.
Oh, the Rancor.
Yeah, it's like that.
But it it tried to eat Luke Skywalker, so maybe it's my favorite character, but he's not that bad.
It's scary if it's trying to eat you, but otherwise it's kind of cute.
Okay, that's fair. Rancors are the pit bulls of the Star Wars universe.
Yep. I'm glad I got you on board this train.
With the Rancors, not with the bug.
Oh, come on. This thing was cute, too. It's the same situation.
Okay, but Rancors don't, like... gnaw on your bones.
There were literally bones scattered all over the Rancor's den.
You're chewing on it. This one enjoys it. I don't know. I'm just making excuses now.
Yeah, you are.
I don't gotta like to stand on here.
Anyway.
We've reached the just saying shit portion of this.
So we learned a little bit more about what happened to the first Russian team when they were trapped in the Ziggurat. And I felt like it was kind of confusing because it's like, okay, so the first Russian team found the sarcophagus and like the idiots they were, I guess, they decided to open it before translating all of the walls. Like, at least Daniel was trying to do his due diligence and like translate the walls before doing anything. So they open the sarcophagus and discover the skeleton of the Gwold Marduk, who was put in there with this creature who was slowly eating him alive because the sarcophagus was healing him while the creature was eating him. So probably took him, I don't know, probably a few decades to die, I'm assuming. I don't know.
That's grim.
Yeah. At least a few years, I would assume. I don't know. It depends how fast the creature was eating. And, like, right. How much tissue the sarcophagus can regenerate.
I can't say that on this show. That's messed up.
Yeah. Anyway, so the creature was still alive when the sarcophagus was opened and escaped. And, of course, like, the gold had gone into this creature. And so... The gold in this creature is... I don't think we ever get a name for this creature, so I just have to keep saying creature. Anyway, it's loose. And so the Russian team we obviously know that one of them was eaten and two of them were crushed in a collapse, and one of them took cyanide, and then I think probably was also eaten after he took the cyanide. But the anthropologist who was on this mission doing all the translating for the first Russian team, Britsky, he had to have been there at least for quite a while, not under a lot of pressure, or I don't know, or like well protected, because he had time to take detailed notes of what happened to them there and a very detailed drawing of the Eye of Tiamat. And it's like, how were you able to take the time to do that? Because the Eye of Tiamat was in the sarcophagus, so he had to have done that after the creature was out. How did he have time to do all that writing and drawing before getting killed?
Because the plot needs to move forward.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's like one of those things where like I don't know if TV show writers have ever seen like academics taking notes, but the drawings are usually like a very hasty sketch.
Yeah.
At least from what I remember.
Yeah.
Anecdotally. So I feel like it's just to like move the plot along because there's no time to fully render.
Yeah.
Something like that.
It was a very precise drawing. So yeah, I don't know.
The art department had a couple weeks to throw it together.
I mean, it could be that Britsky was just really good at drawing and he has
wasted in his current role.
Right. I mean, maybe he just had some really good drawing tools with him and he was able to render it really quickly, but
pursued the arts. Right? He'd still be alive too.
I don't think that would have helped him in fighting against a gold.
No, probably not.
But yeah, so SG-1 and the Russian team are like trying to simultaneously figure out a way to get out and figure out what's happened to the creature. And so basically Daniel is translating his walls while everybody else is kind of wandering around the ziggurat trying to figure out what's going on. And Jack is with the Russian team leader and talking, and like Jack, he just keeps throwing shade in whatever way he can. And he basically talks about how like the Russian team's carrying cyanide pills is like, he implies that it's like either wrong or like evil in some way. And I'm like, I don't see why it's bad. I mean, if you're in an impossible situation and you know you're going to die a really horrible, painful death, would it not be nice to have a cyanide pill to make it end faster?
I would think so.
But Jack, like, talks about it like it's a horrible, terrible thing. And it's like, well, but...
but also calm down.
Yeah, I feel like it's not really that big of a deal. Like, if you don't agree with it, fine. But why are you being so harsh about it towards them? At least the Russians have a protocol.
Which is a lot more than SG-1 can say in any respect.
Yeah. Like, come on. But we do, like, get a few, like, moments of comic relief here and there. So we have whenever Sam and Teal'c figure out that the Gwold is in the creature and the creature is still out there. So the Gwold could have jumped. Well, so they find the creature dead, but the symbiote's not in it. So the Gwold is in a person, and Jack and Colonel Zhukov point their guns at each other at the same time. I'm like, yeah, okay, that was funny. So finally, some comic relief. And then, like what you said, Sam and Teal'c go to check on Daniel, and they, like, initially draw their guns in case he's a Gwold. And he's just, like, looking at them like, I'm just translating my walls, guys.
Which is how they should have known that it was Daniel. Like, it's fine, it's legit.
He's like, can I go back to translating now? Can I tell you about what I've translated? So, yeah, so we find out that Marduk did jump into one of the Russian soldiers. And I guess a Gwold can automatically speak any languages that its host can speak.
Which seems convenient, but okay.
Because, I mean, Marduk would never have had a chance to learn English because he's been locked up in the ziggurat for thousands of years. Yeah. You know? And he certainly wouldn't have had a chance to learn Russian either.
That makes sense if it's like, yeah. If you're a symbiote and you're...
They retain the knowledge of the host. Yeah. Although it was... I guess that he also retains the accent of the host because he's still speaking with a Russian accent in English.
Maybe he thinks that's how you're supposed to speak English.
Maybe.
Like he doesn't... Well, yeah, because even our accents are like how we learned to speak, right?
Yeah.
And how we retain speaking. So if, you know, someone from like the deep American South... Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like, do you know what I mean? Like, if they had a gold that then went into somebody else and retained the English, that's how the English would come out, right?
It depends if the new host also spoke English in a different accent. I'm thinking more of just, like, body swapping in general. Like, if either one of us were to swap bodies with someone with, like, a strong, I don't know, New York accent or something.
No, I think if we were to swap bodies, I think like the brain is the part that is doing the language. So we would.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So like, this New Yorker who's in my body, I would then sound like a New Yorker.
Yeah.
Because it's not me speaking anymore.
Whereas like, I feel like with the Guo'uld, when they take over a body, their consciousness is pushing to the front. Uh-huh. But the language skill is coming from the brain still.
I think that's only because he didn't previously know English. If he had already known English,
Then
he probably would have spoken it differently.
Yeah. Because they're getting the... Well, then how would they speak English? I guess however they wanted to. But yeah, because they're getting the English. Yeah.
Well, like if Apophis...
From the knowledge stored within the Guo'uld. And if the Guo'uld only retained English... via a Russian accent, then that's the English that this Guo'uld speaks.
Yeah. Well, something like if Apophis took a host that didn't know how to speak English, but Apophis knows how to speak English, so he would speak it the way he's always spoken it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, I didn't have a problem with Marduk being able to speak English and Russian. but I did have a problem... A major, like, canon problem in that Marduk had a personal shield, which we have previously discussed was a very new invention that Apophis had, and then it spread to some others in the past couple years. Marduk has been buried for thousands of years, so canonically, that does not make sense.
The writers forgot.
Yeah.
That's what this is they forgot.
So it's like, either Marduk was ahead of his time and he invented the personal shield and it wasn't until thousands of years later that another Guo'uld figured it out.
Revolutionary.
Or somebody messed up.
I think somebody messed up.
Yeah. So the colonel, the Russian colonel Zhukov, manages to toss a grenade at the Russian soldier inhabited by Marduk, which really only ends up killing Zhukov, because Marduk is okay. He heals and comes after them. But Daniel manages to figure out that there is a ring transporter in the main chamber, and so they are able to escape. And they planted some C4 so that they blow up Marduk on their way out. And there is only one Russian survivor of this whole thing. So
that's not going to cause World War III at all.
Yeah. And also what I found interesting was, you know, she was being debriefed by Colonel Chekhov when she got back to the SGC. And I'm like, she got bit pretty early on and was passed out for the majority of that. So, like, I don't know how much she actually saw. She was unconscious.
Dream scenario. In a horrifying nightmare situation, just sleep.
Right.
Right. Not interested in being present for that.
Yep. But yeah, so this is the first time that we see Colonel Chekov, who we see at the end, played by Gary Chalk. We will see him in a total of 10 episodes as this character. His character name is apparently an homage to Pavel Chekov in Star Trek.
Yeah,
Mr.
Chekov. I do know who that is.
Okay, well, I don't know who that is. So. but yeah, this actor has done an insane amount of voice acting. His IMDb list is super long, and he is still active. So
I looked him up because mm-hmm. I thought he was somebody else in this episode. So I wanted to see like where I knew that guy from. So uh-huh. I looked him up, and two things jumped out. One, uh-huh. he was in 3 episodes of MacGyver, which I thought was funny. Yeah. And two, he did voices for Beast Wars. Mm-hmm. The Transformers spin-off cartoon, which I thought was funny because in the last episode they're like everything changed after the Beast Wars, and I'm like, Beast Wars like the cartoon? No. Which is what it literally what it says in my notes. So the fact that the next episode has a guy who was in Beast Wars,
right,
was very funny.
Yep. I recognized him from Dark Angel, of course, because I'm always recognizing people from there. He was in 3 episodes of that show as like this cop who's kind of a dirtbag.
Well,
yeah, and then we have the woman, Lieutenant Tolonev. She was in Battlestar Galactica as a semi-regular character. And then there's the guy who played Valerian was in 2 other SG-1 episodes as other random people. Also, we do have a Peter DeLuise cameo in the form of the Oh, are you okay?
Yeah. I knocked my pen over? And it almost fell. Yeah.
So when General Hammond is looking at some Russian documents, one of the Russian officers is actually Peter DeLuise.
Oh.
So he has a little cameo in there.
Peter DeLuise collecting both paychecks, I see.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? In this economy?
Yeah, and so I looked up some like trivia type stuff on this. So on the Russians' uniforms, they have what looks like a 3 next to a B over a 1, and so that's Cyrillic lettering for Z and V. So the transliteration would be ZV1, which basically translates to Stargate 1. So it's like their own version of SG-1. But
that's
in Russian.
So cute.
Yeah. And then also Marduk is the Goa'uld who took Kendra from her homeworld. If you remember Kendra from the season 1 episode with the Vikings.
Yes.
And Thor's yes. hammer. And Kendra was there. She had gone through Thor's hammer and defeated her Goa'uld. She was previously working for Marduk. So.
Damn.
So that means Kendra is old.
Well, yeah. Thousands of years old.
Yeah. Well, so that answers my question of why she never went back to her home planet. It's because thousands of years had passed. So. None of her family was alive anymore. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah. I didn't go back either.
Because I think Marduk had been in the tomb for 2,000 years. So I guess maybe Kendra's Goa'uld, I mean, obviously didn't get entombed. So she was off doing whatever before Kendra finally. So it took Kendra 2,000 years to convince her Goa'uld to go to the planet with Thor's hammer. That's insane.
That's a really long game you're playing, Kendra.
Yeah. I mean, it worked. But
yeah, like at what cost?
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah, so I mean, other than all of Jack's silly commentary about the Russians, I thought this was a fun episode.
Yeah. Kind of gross, but you know, fun.
Oh, but it's a cute little monster.
Oh my god.
So first episode was problematic. Second one was
a little problematic.
A little bit. Not horrible.
Not as much. but a little,
not as much as the first one.
A little problematic as a treat.
Yes. So yeah, I don't think the first episode really holds up. No. But the second one I think is mostly okay. I mean, there are definitely still people who think that way about Russians, I'm sure. I feel like we have a perpetual Cold War going on between the US and Russia. It's not technically a Cold War anymore, but like...
It's a pretty easy default, though.
Yeah. So, I'm sure there are some people who have no problems with all of the, you know, Russian commentary, but I felt like it was
a touch excessive.
Yeah, it was excessive. So, any final thoughts?
Nope.
I think we covered everything. Okay, so next week we will be discussing SG-1 Season 5, Episodes 9 and 10, Between Two Fires and 2001. Arzu, are you ready for your next quote?
Yes, I am.
They don't get excited in general. It's like an entire planet of accountants.
Think it's Jack. Because he's the only one who would say it that way. They've come back from whatever planet they were on. Uh-huh. And they're trying to explain something to him. And he's not quite getting it. These people don't excite easily. And Jack's like, it's like an entire planet of accountants. And everyone's like, what? It's like, Teal'c wouldn't make that comparison. And... Right. Oh, maybe would Daniel? It's not Sam. Sam doesn't think that way.
Sam would not think that accountants are boring. She would
probably... nor would she think to make that comparison.
No.
In general, like she's usually pretty straightforward. But actually, you know what? I'm going to say it's Daniel.
Okay.
Yeah. Same context. I'm just going to say it's Daniel.
Any other hints about context you want to give?
I don't know what's going on with the people on the planet they were on, but they just don't, like, maybe something's going on with an alien and they've just, like, sapped their joy. So this is what they're trying to explain.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll find out next week. That's it for today. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, we would love for you to rate us 5 stars wherever you can. If you want to talk to us about Stargate, you can find us on our podcast Twitter page, mostly at Wormhole Waffles. I also have a Tumblr, which I don't check, but I probably should. I also have a Blue Sky, which I definitely don't check, and I probably should. I think I have Hive, too. I haven't logged into that in like 6 months. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at Chelsea Fairless. I actually check those. So where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Blue Sky at Arzu Amin. You can find me on Instagram and Tumblr at ArzuD2. On Threads too. I don't use it, but I do have it. I don't have the brain capacity for more than one. And I keep thinking if I cross post, it's the same people who see all three and they're just going to unfollow me. So so that's where you can find me. As for the network, you can find us on Twitter at Geeky_Waffle. We are The Geeky Waffle on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Tumblr. We are The Geeky Waffle on YouTube. We are at thegeekywaffle.com. And we are on Patreon, patreon.com/thegeekywaffle.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you on the other side of the event horizon.